Tango Tango Papa, 1914, July 4th, 2015.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Gordonsville, Virginia. It's been, quite a while since the last podcast. So I made it home, and I was home for about 5 days, the usual 5 days off. And I came back to work on the 2nd, July the 2nd. Today is July the 4th. So they had me pick a load up when I left on the 2nd. They had me pick a load up at Joplin, Missouri, and then I brought that load to Gordonsville, Virginia, and I unloaded here. I'm still at Gordonsville. Unloaded here this afternoon, and then they sent another load that picks up, I'd have to look at the Qualcomm, about 50 miles from here or something like that, 50 or 60 miles, at another town in Virginia, and the name of it, it's right on the tip of my tongue, but it's escaping me at the moment. But that load delivers to, I believe, Mount Sterling, Illinois, but it doesn't pick up until I guess it would be Monday morning. If today is today was Saturday, I believe. Let me check. Yep, Saturday, July the 4th. So tomorrow is the 5th, and then Monday is the 6th. And so I won't. There's a truck stop here with a McDonald's and what have you at Gordonsville, and so I was already parked after in a. It took them an hour or an hour and a half before they sent the load offer. And then I decided I would just go ahead and stay right here. I think maybe Harrisonburg is where the load picks up. I believe that's it. Anyway, since I was here, it was easier just to hang out here. There is a truck stop at Harrisonburg, but it suffers from the same problem that a lot of truck stops in a town suffer from. People are using it as a parking lot. Even this truck stop here at Gordonsville, there are plenty of these trucks. This isn't a very big truck stop to begin with, and there are people have dropped trailers in here, and I'm sure they've parked their truck and someone comes and gets them, or they may even park their car out in the parking lot as if this was their workplace. And they bring the truck and then they go up to their car in the parking lot up in the front and go home. So that's a typical, very typical thing that happens if you have very much of a population that lives around a truck stop. So decided I would just go ahead and hang out here, and then I will go up to Harrisonburg tomorrow and hang out there until Monday morning. So I have a couple of audio files, messages sent from Joel, and I haven't listened to them at all, so we're going to be listening to those together for the first time. So I'm don't even really know what he's talking about in those files, but I'm sure it's probably going to be something interesting. Of course, if you've been paying any attention to the news at all, lots of tumultuous things happening with the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has been in recent years, they're really they're sort of traitors that are in government. And the reason that we have traitors in government, people think that the system is corrupted, or it's the system and it's the capitalist system or whatever. That's not it. It's the morals. You take the morals away from the general voting public in a representative democracy. Take the morals away, and who are they going to vote for? They're going to vote for the people that are more rotten than they are. And the traitorous nature that becomes implanted in each new generation as it becomes more corrupt, that traitorous nature simply expresses itself in the form of politics. And so who do we end up with in political offices? And so it's not, there is no political fix for it. You could have a perfect politician, and it's not going to do any good. They're not going to be able to reverse it. It from the top down. It can't be reversed. I know there are a lot of people that think that has to be the way that it gets reversed, but it is not. That it cannot be reversed that way. You can have a country, and there's been plenty of examples of countries with that are just corrupt, horrible countries, and with dictators and kings, and sometimes they, you know, the English have this saying, good king. It's a term that they use, good king, and what they really mean by that is that sometimes they just accidentally get one that's good. And even a good king or a good dictator can't dictate, he may be able to dictate while he is in power, and kind of rule things while he's in power and make people do the right thing, but sooner or later the guy dies and things move on, and you end up with the rotten people get in charge again, you know. So, and then besides that, you take the good person away that's forcing you to do the right thing, and you revert back to your rotten ways. So there is no fix for it from a political standpoint. And so that's why I'm not even, I'm paying scant attention to news stories, the political stuff that's going on, all the turmoil. There's no point in it. The analogy that I've given before, and it holds up very well. Let's say you have a relative that is an alcoholic, or they abuse drugs, or they're on cocaine or meth or methamphetamines. Let's make it really bad. They're on meth. They're a meth head, and you're trying to get them to stop, and they say they're going to stop, and then they steal and rob so that they can do whatever it is with their meth, and keep the supply of meth going, or cocaine or whatever it is. And you can get involved in every little up and down, and every rotten thing that they do, and every promise that they break. Why would you subject yourself to that? And so it's the same thing with what's going on politically. Why would I subject myself to all this crazy, insane minutia that's going on? And it's just going to get worse. And you can't argue with these people. You can't talk them out of it. Can't talk them into thinking the right way or into acting the right way. So it's really a waste of time. It really is a waste of time to give it a second thought. So people, they're going to have to end up in the gutter. And a lot of them have already, and a hell of a lot more are going to have to end up in the gutter. That's the only thing that can cause people, sadly, it seems that's the only thing that can cause some people to come around, is when they're in the gutter and there's nowhere else to go. Some people start thinking rationally, other people just die happily, or, you know, they die in the gutter. And probably not happily. So, but they're really, it seems to us, and for, to me it seemed a long time, that things were just going wrong politically. And, of course, they were going wrong politically, but there was a reason why they were going wrong politically. It had nothing to do with, oh, well, somehow the political process just got corrupted, or somehow it's stubbing its toe and it just keeps stumbling. No. The reason that it's gone wrong for such a long period of time, and it's especially now, the reason it's gone wrong is not simply because, well, something, it went wrong somehow. It's because of the morals. The morals really do matter. It really does matter that you sent your kids to the public school system. You fed them to it. And now and if you're still stupid enough to feed your kids to the public school system, and I know if you're listening, and some of my listeners are not very happy with me when I talk this way, but if you're stupid enough to continue to do it, now what's happening, since all this same-sex marriage stuff has come along, now they're going to give them sodomy lessons. Not only are they going to give them sex lessons, they've been giving sex lessons for years, which that's part of the corrupting process, giving sex lessons, calling, oh, it's sex education. No, it's sex lessons. So now they're giving sodomy lessons, and it won't be too long, and they're going to be demonstrating it and getting them group participation. So you got schools that are implanting IUDs in the girls without telling the parents. So enjoy your public school system. It's just, you know, you think you're paying for it, and somehow it's for free or something. You know, it never ceases to amaze me. Even people that claim to be conservative, I pay for health insurance. And so then they try to get every little thing they can out of the health insurance, and they wait for the tests and go through all of the gyrations. Rather than just paying for it, and then either the insurance is going to reimburse you for something, or it won't. But they're trying to squeeze every little thing out of the system, and it never ceases to amaze me why in God's name would somebody subject themselves to that. And then they say, well, they can't afford it. Well, yeah, a lot of these people can. You can afford your kids to have the Xbox and all the cell phones and the iPods and God knows whatever else it is that they have. People have the fancy cars and fancy houses and everything else, but yet somehow they can't pay for their own health care. So it's a mess, and it's just going to get worse, and it's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse, and sooner or later it's going to get very violent. The United States of America is not Europe. It's not. We have absolutely different social dynamics going on here. People are not just people. There are different social dynamics that are happening. Like it or not, I know there are people that want to reprogram the social dynamics. So far, they haven't had too good of luck. If you try to reprogram the social dynamics here, you're not going to get the same results as you've gotten maybe in some European countries. Those are the ones people always throw up as the wonderful utopian example. I've been listening, or I finished listening to it. There's this audiobook, the latest one that I got from Audible, is called The Shallows, and I don't have the author's name in front of me. The name of the book is The Shallows, and what his this was from, I think he wrote it in 2009 or 2010 is when it was revised. But what his thesis is, what his idea is, that the internet, each time some technology comes along, it changes our brain structure. Our brain structure, our thinking changes, you know, what we do ends up changing our brain structure. And so his idea is that and it's perfectly valid, that the internet, the advent of the internet, has caused people to stop reading as many books. It has caused people's attention span to really become even shorter. People have a hard time actually reading books now, reading longer books. People tend to just skip over this and skip over that and try to get through as much as they possibly can. And I believe he's absolutely right. We do skip through things now. And we try to get through as much as we possibly can, whether it's on a computer or a smartphone or a tablet of some sort. We're skipping through things, and then that carries over to if we do still have paper magazines or newspapers, we're skipping through stuff more so than ever. So that does change our thinking, the way we think. Now, if you take the internet away and all you have is books and all you've got are magazines, your thinking would change back. Your brain structure would change back. But in the meantime, it is what it is now. And not only that, but epigenetics. Epigenetically, and he doesn't really go into this very much, but epigenetics, which I've talked about in the past, epigenetics, because you have basic genetics, but the genetics, your genes are just simply their blueprints. And so what your genetics ends up being is much more complex than simple, than what genes were dominant and which genes are recessive. It ends up being much more complicated than that. And so it, in other words, it ends up depending on the environment to a large extent. And so you throw all of those things into the mix, depending on the environment. The sins of the father are visited upon the third and fourth generations. That's true. I know there are people that don't like that, and that's right in your Bible. They don't like that, but it's been proven now with epigenetics. You do bad things, and then your offspring, it ends up impacting them genetically. And it's proven scientific. Bring science into it. Scientific fact. So all of this kind of goes together and creates a different social dynamic in the United States that's vastly different than what goes on in Europe and in European countries. So people aren't just people. They're different. And you get this different dynamic that goes on. And the dynamic here, I'm afraid, is there's a big potential for violence. And I've said it before, and I really do believe it. We have, in the United States of America, if we turn into a Nazi Germany, and we're slowly turning into that kind of a country, we're going to make the Nazi Germany look like, we have the potential to make it look like a school, Sunday school. If you think what was bad that went on there, you have no clue how bad it can become here, because we've got different social dynamic. We've got much different social dynamics, and I believe that the potential for violence, the potential for depravity is way worse than whatever could have occurred in Nazi Germany. I really do believe that. So, let's see here. I think I will, at this point, I'll go ahead and play Joel's first comment, and this is from a few days ago. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Finally getting around. excuse me. Finally getting around to listening to your podcast. I think I skipped one or two because I've been, like you, have been very busy. But you know, you're talking about there. The stuff that you played from Glenn Beck on I can't think of what it is. The stuff with regards to Lot. And yeah, it's, you know, I think the best I can describe it, and it's not just happening on the gay rights stuff, but it's also happening on, well, equal rights in general. It's not an issue. It's the biggest issue here is not so much the fact that they want equal rights. That's not really what they want. They don't want equal rights. They want superior rights. They don't care about equal rights. Because if they did, then they would not complain when one of their own gets shot because they committed a crime. They would not complain if once, you know, if they didn't have a need to actually be considered an official marriage so that they can get health insurance and stuff like that. Because that's really, you know, a lot of people, especially on the gay rights side, a lot of people don't really realize that that's what it's about.
Okay, let me interrupt. It's not really about any of these things, even though they're saying that it's about they want to feel equal and they want the health insurance benefits and, you know... It's not really about that, because to be perfectly honest, I have no problem if two guys or two gals want to live together. Fine. If let's say that one of them works in some place and they want to get on the other one's health insurance, they should at least. Legally, I have no problem. Why can't I put somebody on my health insurance? Why does it have to be? Do they have to be a relative? Why do they have to be? Does there have to be some kind of legal relationship? Why can't I just put someone? Let's say someone's living with me, or they're whatever it is, and it wouldn't even have to be a. That kind of relationship. It could be, what if you had a nephew living with you and you wanted to put him on your health insurance, him or her, or a nephew or a niece, or a grandchild? How could you put them on your health insurance? The way it's set up, or at least it has been, you probably can't. So it would be, I have no problem at all if let's say that you have someone living with you, you want to put them on your health insurance, or you have to pay so much and you can add additional people. If you've got, I'm assuming that's probably how, and that's really how it works, really. If you have a family and you've got some kids, you know, the bigger the family is, the more the family plan costs, I think, is the way it works. So... it could work exactly the same way, and I have no problem whether it's legal marriage or just, you know, a guy living with a guy or a gal living with a gal or whatever. What it really is about, it's kind of about they want the official sanction, and... But the reason that they want it is not what you think it is. You know, maybe, sure, there are some that probably would like to take advantage of financially of the health insurance. But what it's really about, and I have some experience with this. not with the homosexual stuff, but with sin in general. Because the way it works, you know, and if, you know, you've met me, Joel has, I've met Joel a couple of times in person. And if you've seen pictures of me on the internet, if you've never met me, you know that I am absolutely covered with tattoos, okay? Now, potentially, I could be very, very unhappy because even though tattoos are more accepted than they were in the past, and probably, let's be honest, it's probably because the morals have been in decline. But nonetheless, tattoos are more accepted than they were in the past, okay? So, but even so, I've taken it to even more of an extreme. So, you're not going to see too many people running around with tattoos on their head or even up into their face. You're just not going to see that. And so, if I was really worried about it, and a lot of people that do that have as the level of tattoos that I have, they're really, whether they say they, you know, if they can say that they don't care what people think or whatever, they may say that, but they really do, and they really are watching, and they really do notice when people stare at them. And it really bothers them if the you know, little kids in particular point them out. Mommy, mommy, look! What's wrong with that man? Or that type of thing. Or, you know, and it happens with fat people too. In fact, the people that, let's say you have somebody that's 350 pounds or more, and a lot of times they're worried about, especially women. I've been watching this. It's an interesting series. It's a British series on. Been watching it on Hulu Plus called Fat Doctor. And if you've got Hulu Plus, it's a documentary style program, and they have these fat people, and they're taking them through bariatric surgery, different types of. It's mostly gastric bypass. But a lot of these fat women, in particular, are really sensitive to if people are looking at them, or people are, little kids might make a comment about how fat they are, or any kind of little comment at all, they're worried that somebody is noticing that they're fat. So, but, so what ends up, I can tell you what happens. Then you think, well, somehow, if the state would just sanction it, because I feel miserable because these other people are looking at me and I'm different than they are, but yet I want to be different. I want the tattoos, and yet I'm different than these other people, and they're all staring at me. And so you begin to think, well, what can I do? If I could make this official, then it would take the stigma away, and then people would stop looking at me. But that's the reasoning that goes on in their heads. And now, fortunately, there's a way out of that. You know, and I've talked about that as well quite a bit. There is a way, you know, basically your sins are still there. The sins are scarlet, but they're wiped away. And they're, if you can really understand that, that really does work. If you can, it doesn't work exactly the same way that the preacher in the church the churchiosity type thing. It doesn't quite work that way. But if you can deeply understand the words that are in the Bible, and you can really understand how that works, if you can kind of come to that understanding. And you're not going to be able to necessarily do it with words alone. If you can come to the understanding of what those words are describing, then it really does work. And you know, and then it doesn't matter. You know, I don't care if people are staring at me. I really don't. It's because I don't have to. And the reason I don't have to is because I'm not dependent on. I'm really not dependent on what other people think. I don't need compliments. I don't imbibe compliments, and so therefore I'm not subject to ridicule. Somebody wants to ridicule me, have at it. Ridicule all day long, and be careful when you do, because because I don't resent. That's another key. I don't resent if somebody ridicules me, shoots me a dirty look or whatever. I don't resent them, and something very strange dynamic takes place. That's it's kind of hard to describe, but an interesting thing happens, and then the negative thing comes right back on the person that's trying to project it in to get me to take it up. So these people are thinking that you know they're guilty people, and you do some of those things, the sexual things, especially the sodomy, and I don't know how much you know about this, but there's something that's called fisting, and it's pretty gross. If you're engaged in that behavior, either on the receiving end or whatever, not to be too gross, if you're engaged in that behavior, you're guilty. You are a guilty person, and you are violating your own constitution. We as human beings, and I know a lot of people don't want to believe this, and if you're one of those people, I don't really care if you believe me or not. Go away. Because you can try to make your arguments that we're just externally programmed by our culture and what have you, and there is no other set of ethics. You can think that all day long, and you try to convince other people that everything's a shade of gray. Go away. Stop bothering me. Because there is such a thing as right and wrong, and so we have this internal, we're born with it, we're born with this internal constitution, whether you like it or not. Now, you may think that, and a lot of people do think, that it's just it's programmed from the outside, and somehow all we have to do is just get everybody to agree that wrong is right and right is wrong, and it's okay to kill your baby. In fact, it's a noble thing to kill your baby, for example, on picking on the abortion folks, and that everything's going to be hunky-dory we'll all sing kumbaya and there will be no more guilt, and we can just sex up a storm and kill as many babies as we want and eat the fetuses or God knows whatever else these people would do with it. And we'll all be happy and there won't be any more pain and nobody will have any psychological pain. And of course that's not true, because you're violating your own constitution. It doesn't matter how many people you get to agree with you. And this is the key with the gay rights thing. No matter how many people they get to agree with them that, you get it legally, it's okay, you can get married now, but they're still guilty. And the thing is, if, like me with the tattoos, was still in the other mode of thinking, then I could think, well, it's these other people not accepting me that's making me feel bad, that's making me feel guilty because I've screwed my body up, et cetera, and I've defaced it, but it's these other people, it's their fault. They're making me feel guilty, and I could think that way. And then, of course, then the next step, I'd have to start maybe thinking about, well, I'm going to start passing laws that forces them to employ me, and I can put a tattoo on the end of my nose, and they still have, and I can pass a law and force them to employ me, and if they talk bad about me, it's hate speech. you know, and then it, but see, that turns into a bottomless pit, because no matter how much, you know, you can have a society, you know, that where everything, they even worship whatever it is, whatever the sin is, worship those sinners, it's never enough, because they're still guilty. And the more you engage in the bad behavior, whatever the bad behavior is, and it can be anything, it can literally be anything, whatever it is you idolize, and I'm not talking about the totem pole in the corner, the idolization happens in your mind. So whatever that is, whatever it is that you're engaged in, the bad behavior, it just makes you worse, and therefore you become more guilty, and therefore you have to find something else and that's what turns it into a bottomless pit. You've got to find something greater, some goal to work towards to get rid of the guilt. Somehow you think you've got a bigger wedge, that drive a bigger wedge between yourself and your conscience. And so it turns into a bottomless pit. And so that's why there's no such thing as compromising with the devil. Because you compromise with the devil, you know, it's like multiplying with, you know, if you multiply a positive number with a negative number, you always end up with a negative number. Same difference, same type of thing. So there is no such thing as a little bit of evil. So these people are engaged at this point. They, you know, there's bunches of them, and you know, we've got rampant moral decay in our society, and it's really it has hit critical mass in many ways, and so now it's all downhill from here. And there is, it's a bottomless pit, and so they'll get whatever the next thing it is that they get, then they're not going to be happy with that, and they'll want something else, and they want something else, and they want something else, and it's always someone else's fault that they're feeling bad. So that not only applies to the homosexuals, that applies to people that have had abortions, it applies to people that have fornicated, it applies to adulterers, you know, go down your list of the Ten Commandments, thou shalt not, and everything that people do that's on, you know, that's on that list, they're going to feel guilty about, and they're going to try to force someone else to thinking that somehow if we just change the thinking and force the herd, the herd's going to love me and I'm going to feel fine again, because after all, we're just animals. And so that's kind of the thinking, and of course it doesn't work. And right up there at the top, of course, you may believe that you're not engaged in adultery, and you're not engaged in any of these other morbid sins. But of course, right at the top, we all have ended up, whether we want to admit it or not, or whether we even realize it or not, we've all engaged in idolatry. Idolatry happens in the mind. I played in a recent podcast, I played the audio from that gal that had her Apple Watch, and she was comparing it to the original iPhone, and she was kind of, and of course it was kind of, she played it up for the camera, and she's kind of being cutesy about it, that she loved the little thing and was kissing it and kissing the original iPhone and how cute it was, and sort of anthropomorphizing it. But she really, that really is idolatry, and you could tell that even though she was playing it up, she really did sort of glorify in her mind, she's glorifying the iWatch or the Apple Watch, and she's glorifying her iPhone, and she's glorifying technology in general. And it can be anything. You can do that with a toothpick. You literally could do it with a toothpick, and it would be just as damaging psychologically and spiritually. And so this is rampant in our society. And people are just going to have to end up in the gutter. That's all there is to it. Nowhere else to go. And then possibly you might start thinking rationally. It's possible. But even at that, some people won't. They'll just die right in the gutter, literally or figuratively. So anyway, I could keep going on and on, so we'll never get through Joel's comment unless I shut up. So once again, here's Joel.
It's not about being equal. They want things that us married folks get. So my solution to that is, and you know, I'm a married person and I would be greatly affected by it. But my thing is, I don't need a federal government or anybody else to manage or to approve of my wedding. The only person that needs to approve of that is God. And that's already happened.
Okay, let me interrupt once again. You don't know how right you are. And when you say that, God has already approved. Well, how did that happen? It didn't happen in the church. I know you may mean, I don't know exactly what you mean, but it may have happened in the church, but fundamentally, you take the church away, fundamentally it happened because your internal constitution knew, and you and your wife, you know it's right. You know that man and husband and wife is right. And before everything else, fundamentally, you know that that's right. You know that union is correct. And that's what I'm talking about. There's this internal constitution, and that is not programmed in. That is something that is absolutely fundamental. It's not dominant. I've called it sort of a latent set of ethics, but that approval that you feel, you know that it's right. That's it right there. Whether you believe it or not, that is at a very basic level. That is the approval of your Creator. And you don't really necessarily even know that it's there. It's kind of like health. You don't really know that it's there until it's missing. And so once the approval is missing, that's when you know you got a problem. And so somehow they think that they can get the approval of man. If they can get the approval of man somehow, the approval of, you know, their fellow man somehow, that it's going to take that ache away. It's going to take the massive toothache that's going on in their mind. It's going to somehow take it away. And of course it won't. And in fact, it's just going to make it worse. So the more they get, the less they have. And that's generally true with a lot of things. The more you, you know, if you're using something as a wedge between yourself and your conscience, and the more you violate your own, this internal constitution, the more you violate it, the worse it becomes. So you don't know how right you are, but you nailed it right there. And I wanted to go ahead and point that out, because at a very basic, fundamental level, you have the approval of God, because that husband and wife, one man, one woman relationship is absolutely right. And we all know it is. And we don't have to have a judge. We don't have to have a book to tell us. We know that it's right.
Yeah. So it's like, why are, you know, the only reason that we're doing this is because of the corruption in the government. And the other side of the world, well, you guys, you know, the right is corrupted. And I'm like, you looked in the mirror, you know? Everyone wants pointing their fingers at each other, and nobody's willing to do the right thing. It's the Pharisees and the Sadducees. That's the whole thing that happened right about the time of the crucifixion. You know, you had the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and you had Jesus. And neither one of them liked him.
Let me interrupt once again. Boy, you're bringing up all kinds of great points. I've noticed it for a long time, but I realized just in the past day or two what people do. When people are threatened, let's say you have someone that is, they've got their favorite sin they want to protect, and so what they'll do in order to, let's make it extreme. Let's say someone's a rabid atheist. So what they do, they try to assault with literalism. And so they'll come out and they'll try to become very literal with the meaning of the words, and then they'll ridicule it, because then let's say they take a Bible verse and they try to take it as literally as they possibly can, Bible verse or what someone has said, they'll take it as literally as they possibly can so that they can ridicule it. And then you have the difference kind of between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Because the letter, you have to use words in order to, and then you come up with the letter of the law. But the letter of the law is trying to describe, or should be trying to describe, the spirit of, the law, or the spirit of right and wrong, or the spirit of this constitution that we all are innately born with. So they become literal. And so the Sadducees and the Pharisees, really what they were doing, they were kind of becoming literal, because they didn't really want to hear, in this case, what Jesus had to say. They were threatened by it. And so it can be a rabid atheist, but it can also be someone that's been involved with abortion and wants to believe that abortion is right, or it could be someone that's maybe they're otherwise, they seem okay, but they've stepped out on their husband, or they've stepped out on their wife, or they've got some kind of their secret pornography problem, or God knows whatever it is that people do, or they're into technology and they're worshiping the technology, and yet because that could be just as damaging. It really can be. If that's the golden, you make this golden calf in your mind. It doesn't have to be a physical object. Physical objects, people use physical objects to help them conjure. But what they're conjuring, the spirits that they're conjuring are in their mind, after all. And they use make images in their mind. For lots of folks, it's electronic devices, technology. And I know of whence I speak, because I've spent probably a good fortune on technology, especially in the past, high fidelity electronics. I went through years of upgrading and buying this and buying this new thing, and this one's even better, and... how many people do you know that dropped a couple of $1,000 on speakers? me, let me raise my hand. So, in the past. So, I know what I'm talking about. Been there, done that. So, idolization happens in our mind. And it... is just as damaging as these other things. And in fact, the other things are sort of a form of the same thing. But all these things are kind of related. So they just kind of end up with different details. So again, I could go on and on and on, but let's listen to the rest of Joel's comment.
Very well. Some pretended like they liked them, you know, but the Pharisees and Sadducees, they were against any of the teachings, you know, they did not like the fact that Jesus came in and said that, you know, like probably the biggest one that I remember is where he was out in the field picking heads off of probably, I think it was either barley or wheat, but picking the seeds off the plants and eating them on a Sunday. Oh, he's working on the Sabbath. He can't do that. Blah, blah, blah. You know, and yet they always complained about what Jesus did, but they didn't complain about what they already knew was happening in their own circles. Did they work on a Sunday? Yes, they did. Did they eat, you know, pick grains on a Sunday? Well, you know, they justified it. You know, they said, so-and-so's doing it, so I'm okay too. And you're right. It's an absolute parallel to the Bible. And it's happening now. It's going to happen again. It's going to happen again. You know, there was the Battlestar Galactica. Was a show, at least the reinvented one, where the Cylons, you know, they said, all this has happened before and all of it will happen again. And that was because everyone was basically just going about doing, you know, justifying things, seeing what they were, you know, knew was right and stuff like that, you know, and it went down and down and down and down until it decided to destroy itself, you know. So anyway, that's all I'm thinking about. You know, I agree with you. And all I know is, you know, eventually the day will come. No one knows the day. No one knows the hour. It's going to come.
Thank you, Joel. So, again, just kind of remember that people that are threatened by the truth will retreat into literalism. And they'll try to assault you with it as well. So, you know, it not only is it a retreat, it is a retreat because it's sort of a way of, in your own mind, you can try to use literalism as a wedge. Because after all, the war is going on in your head, too. It's going on in your own mind. So you can use literalism as a wedge against your own constitution, and try to reinterpret it. And the legalism is going on in your head as well. You try to decide, oh, it's really okay for me to do whatever it is. That's really okay. It was that was really a good thing that I did. There's nothing wrong with that. And so these arguments go on in our heads constantly. So it's a retreat, but then also you try to use it as a weapon because the reason it works, I'll tell you this, the reason it works as a weapon, if someone's able to use literalism as a weapon and get someone to back down, the reason it works is because the person has already used it to a certain extent in their own mind. That's what gives it power. That's what gives literalism power, is that they've already used it to rationalize against their own constitution. They've already used it to one extent or another to rationalize. And then that's what gives it power. And so then someone can take the thing that they've already used and bludgeon them with it. And so that's what gives it power. It's interesting. And so that kind of thing, probably that principle probably also applies to any other tool that people use to rationalize things away within their own mind. That's really a fundamental way that we give power to, we end up giving power to words. We end up giving power to other people because we're doing this rationalizing and within our own mind to try to rationalize what we think of as a bad conscience away. And it's so these are just more extreme examples of it. So anyway, it's an endlessly interesting topic. So anyway, let me go ahead and play the... I've got two other comments from Joel, and so they're... I don't know what they are. So let's go ahead and listen to those. So once again, here's Joel.
Hey, Tom. Haven't heard of your podcast for a while, and it's fine. It's fine. I can't watch every one of the videos you put out either, so I hope all is well. What I'm going to share below is a link to a YouTube video of a... There's a channel goes by the name Dude Like Hella. That would be D-U-D-E, like L-I-K-E, H-E-L-L-A, or Hella, Dude Like Hella. He used to live in California, but has since moved up with his, well, it was then his girlfriend, now it's his wife, into Alaska. And on his channel, he has lots of videos in and around Alaska. He has a DJI Phantom 2 copter, and he also has this new device that he's been using, which basically will shoot a 360-degree video and let you share it to YouTube, and that's what follows below. He actually is using his quadcopter and this 360 video thing. And I thought you might be interested in that because it might actually be something that you could do. You know, I remember when you used to put the camera on your dashboard and speed up some of the video that as you drove along. And that might be something that you could do with this. Although, depending on how you set it up, you could set it up such that you know, while you're driving along, not only can they see the video, but they can see you too, which I think is pretty neat. So I want to go ahead and share that. And one thing you will notice as you're viewing it, if you take your phone and kind of like in front of your eyes and move it around, the image on the video will move around. At least it should on most phones. I know it does on my Nexus 6. I think it should on your Note. And the next is that you can actually drag the video around with your finger and look all around the video. So, you know, if you don't want to turn your phone or move your phone around, you can do the same thing but with just your finger. And it's incredibly neat. I think it's actually designed to work possibly with it might be designed to work with that Google Cardboard thing, because if you look at the icon on the video as it's playing on the strip, there's a icon that looks like the Google Glass thing. You know, it looks almost like a little ViewMaster kind of deal. So I think that's what it's designed for. But it's not 3D. You don't need cardboard to actually see it. It actually works pretty neat. So. Second, and I think they've been talking about this, and I might actually try and buy it because it's actually cheaper than a DJI Phantom, and that's something called the Lily Pad camera. It's not out yet. You can pre-order it now. It's about $600. Okay. Basically, you can just take this camera, all right. And it looks a little bit like, if you look at the front of it, to me, it looks like it actually has a face on it. So it looks like it has a little bit of a personality, even though, you know, it doesn't really. But you take the camera and you just kind of throw it. All right. And before it hits the ground, the props will spin up and it starts to hover. It's waterproof. So you can, you know, it can get wet. All right. And basically, the idea of it, I don't think there's a remote with it, but I think what you can do is you can put on this thing on your wrist, and as you ride along, like in your case, as you rode along on your motorcycle, it could tail you. And you can do the same thing with other sports and stuff like that. Now, what I'll probably do is I'll just use it to record video as I walk along. My one idea is I do this video, and you can see them in my YouTube channel, which I think it's called Life in Ohio. But I think I put it there. If I didn't put it there, I did share it on the YouTube account. But I go on this retreat with the men in my church once a year. It's coming up September, okay? And what we do, we go down to this, it's like a church camp down in southern Ohio. And at the camp, since it's fall, you can't do some of the things that you would normally do at a church camp. So you can't go swimming and stuff like that. But they have two other things that actually look really cool. And I'll actually share the video of the that I created during 2013. What I did that year was there's two things that are really kind of fun to do and that I don't necessarily want to do or can't do depending on because of my weight, because I'm a large man. The two things are one's a zip line. And the other is something called the Goliath swing. The Goliath swing can actually, I can actually go on it. There's no weight limit on it. I can go on it if I want to. But it basically, they'll hook you up to this gear and take you up. There's like a set of like three telephone poles. And then they'll pull you up to the back of that telephone pole. And then you have a latch with a rope on it. When you pull the latch, you go out swinging over this pond in a pretty high level. I didn't do it because I was taking pictures. But if that's what we do this year, which I don't think we're doing that this year, I think we're doing the zip line, then I'll probably go on that. So in 2013, when we did the zip line last, I have one of those little Kodak ZI-8 video cameras, kind of a little bit like one of those flip cameras, but it's Kodak's version of it. And since I didn't really care about it too much, if it got dropped or something, I handed it to him and had him take it up on the zip line with him and had him record the video while he was going down the zip line. And that's actually in the 2013 video. So what I would like to do is I take like something like the DJI Phantom with me and take it out with me. And while I don't know from the safety standpoint if it'll be a good idea for me to fly it over the zip lines if we do zip line this year, but I would definitely try to fly it like near the zip lines while people are on it so that it actually can be included in the video. So now if I got the lily pad, I'd probably do the same thing, but then I would walk around it, and it would just kind of follow me as I'd walk around the zip line. So I'd set it so that it would stay relatively low, and it would just follow me as I walk around. So just something I'm thinking of that would make kind of a cool, interesting video in both those cases, that 360 thing for you, the lily pad for me, although the lily pad looks interesting too. So I'll share a link to that as well.
All right. Well, thank you, Joel. That was both of Joel's comments. He had two different Voxer comments, and so they all kind of went together as one. Anyway, I did watch that video, and that video is really neat because you can watch. It's almost like you're recording the video because as you know, you wiggle like with my Note 4, if I move the phone at all, then it was as if my phone was recording the video, because then the video would sort of jiggle and super, super responsively to any, even the slightest movement that I made, that I would make with the phone. So that's a pretty interesting video. Really pretty neat. Now, the other thing you were talking about, I've heard people talk about the, I guess you called it a lily pad, and I don't know how expensive that is. That's a pretty interesting idea if you had, I guess the thing has to have the battery charged up, but it would follow you, kind of follow along with you. If you were walking or something, it would follow you. Kind of from a bird's eye view type of thing, and I guess you could probably program it to be just a few feet away or whatever. That's kind of an interesting idea, and that way you could almost make your own little documentary even more interesting. You know, by cutting that video in, I guess. So I don't know that I would at this point, I'm not interested in the drone stuff just because it's kind of expensive. And I don't know, for years I've been on the kind of the bleeding edge of things like this, and at this point I would rather wait until it really matures more, and maybe the price goes down and the value of what you get for your money goes up. And at some point, little drone that would follow me around like that would, you know, I might be tempted to buy something like that. Because, you know, it's interesting. For years, I've had different kinds of cameras, and especially 35 millimeter. I've taken lots and lots of 35 millimeter pictures over the years. And so you heard me talk about this before. I went through this. It took me a long time to finally finish it, but I bought a number of years ago a slide scanner for about $50 at a slide and negative scanner at $50 at Walmart. And I started, you know, I've got thousands and thousands of 35 millimeter negatives, and I started scanning them, and I worked on it pretty diligently for a while. Every time I'd go home, I'd scan more and more of those 35 millimeter negatives. And then I kind of stopped for a while. There was a period of 2 years where I just sort of went into a lull and didn't do anything. And then finally, I picked it up and I finished the job. So I got all of these things scanned in, and I really didn't ever do anything with them other than I had them scanned in and I got them backed up. Well, this Google Photos, recently Google announced this thing called Google Photos. And if you let them adjust the quality, so they're employing some compression. If you let them adjust the qualities downwards a little bit, where you're not sending the massive full-sized file, they're employing some compression, it's unlimited. And so, here I am with my, I don't know, I've got probably a terabyte and a half, maybe? Certainly over, at least a terabyte, maybe over a terabyte, of image files. And there's a lot of them that are digital, but there's a lot of them that are 35 millimeter. And so throw in some videos in there, and 28,000 plus image, you know, items. Most of them are actual images, photo images. And this is from, you know, images that I've collected over the years. Some of it scanned stuff that I actually physically scanned in. My parents' photos, which... there's more of that I actually could, that I need to scan in at some point. Scan the actual photos because they don't have the negatives anymore. But a lot of it was 35 millimeter negatives, and then a lot of digital images that I've taken over the years. So 28,000 plus. So what I did, the Google Photos, I heard about it somewhere, I heard somebody talking about it, And I, so this, when I was home this last, just in the past few days, I downloaded, there's a Windows version and a Mac version. So I ended up with the Mac, tried the Windows version, and, you know, I put that on the one Windows machine that I have at home. It's a Windows Vista machine, but also put it on one of the Mac Minis that I have. And so I've got it running on the Mac Mini. And I just went ahead and left the computer on, which that's not a problem because the Mac Minis run just fine unattended. Left the computer on, plugged in one of the backup hard drives, and I've got that, you know, you're able to go into the Google Photos settings on the app and tell it, on the application, and tell it, you know, add folders, which folders you want it to upload. And so it's just automatically uploading, and it's, of course, I have a slow DSL connection at home. It's about 40K up. Is about as good as it gets. It's about 1.5 down and then 0.4 up. So that's kind of slow. But it's pretty reliable, and I've got it going, and so it's that translates probably to about a gigabyte a day. And so it's going to take a while to push all that stuff up. And so far it's continuing to run. It's been since I left. I left on the 2nd, and it was going good on the 2nd, and so it's continuing to go, and the reason I know is because I can open the app on my phone or my iPad or my Samsung tablet, and new images are appearing. You know, it takes some of the images, you know, they're maybe 5, 6 megabytes a piece. Sometimes they're bigger, sometimes they're smaller, but... it's steadily uploading, and so you got all these images, more and more and more of them are appearing. And so eventually they'll all get up there. And it's great because as I'm kind of going through them, I'm finding, you know, remembering these images, you know, and this would be a great one to post to Facebook. So I'm posting all kinds of old images to Facebook, and you know, so it's great to be able to put these in a place now, because I tried uploading a number of years ago. I tried uploading stuff to Flickr, and that was such a horrendous process, and it would abort. You had to do it through a browser, and it was kind of a nightmare. I don't know if they've improved that or not. But this Google Photos, at least now what I'm using, I've got it on Android, and it was really good about uploading all the photo that I take with my phone. Bang, it goes right up there into Google Photos. But so far, it's done a bang-up job with the photos from that backup drive that I have plugged into the Mac Mini. And it hasn't... so far, it hasn't faltered, and I'm expecting at some point something's going to go wrong. It has to, even if it's just the DSL modem or my routers. Something is going to go wrong sooner or later, and I'm going to have, you know, this stuff's going to have to be rebooted. But if that happens, then I'll, you know, I know what the solution is, and my parents are there, and they know how to unplug the DSL modem and plug it back in. And so if that's probably the weakest link, is that DSL modem, and eventually you have to unplug it and plug it back in. But in the meantime, the stuff is uploading, and it's uploading, and it's continuing to upload, and we'll just let that go, and eventually I'll get everything up there. But that's pretty cool, because I'm able, you know, I've got backups, and this is another backup. But the nice part about it is that it's pushing all of that stuff right up there to Google Photos, and I've got access to it. So it's the idea of having access to every photo you've ever taken on whatever device is pretty powerful, and then you can share it, do whatever you want to with it. You've got the images. Now, of course, if I wanted to, I could I'd need to be on a computer to do it efficiently. But I could go through and into the metadata for each picture, the information, and sort of kind of add where it was taken or the subject matter. I could go through and do that, and then you can come back and do searches on those images. You can do that. I experimented with that. That is possible. And then Google was also doing some facial recognition. They're doing a little bit of that, and I'm not exactly... I've played with facial recognition before, and it's not 100% perfect. So the other neat thing about this Google Photos is it's doing some really interesting collages. It's doing some video... it'll take some snippets of video and automatically create a little video for you to music. And some of those are pretty neat. And then you can it's making the suggestion, and all you have to do is, if you want to keep it, is just save it. Save it, and it puts it right into your collection, and then you can instantly share it, especially on Android. Now, you can do it on, because I have it on my iPad as well. And on the iPad, you're basically limited to Google Plus and Facebook, and maybe there's one other choice. But if you've got an Android device, of course, then you've got the full gamut of applications that you can share to. And I think that's because, probably in large part, the reason the iPad is more, or iOS is more limited, is because Apple... has the sandboxing thing between the apps, and then Apple kind of has strict control over what you can do and what you can share in out into and out of an app. Whereas with Android, it's you got quite a bit more leeway, and so pretty slick stuff. If you've not checked out the Google Photos, that's well worth it as far as the way I look at it. This is the first time that I've had a sharing thing that actually is working right, that isn't laborious, and it does offer me the promise that I'm going to have every image that I've ever taken available on every device that I haven't installed on. And the other thing that's pretty neat about it is that it doesn't seem to be taking up an exorbitant amount of room once the when I open it up and I scroll through the photos, the little tiny thumbnails are there, and you can kind of zoom in and zoom out on the thumbnails. And then if you tap on a thumbnail, then it loads a larger, the larger image. And then you've got the opportunity to download it. It's got some really basic photo editing that's built in, but the simple editing that they've included is very powerful. Seems to work really well, and very simple, operates very simply. So really seems to work well. And so it's going to be interesting to see, once I get more images, see how the apps continue to behave well. Because at this point, let me look. Let me look on the iPad. I didn't know I was going to do this, so I didn't have it prepared. But let me get the iPad here. Sorry for bumping the microphone wire there. Okay, so let's see. Photos. There it is, Google Photos. All right, now, does this tell me... I was hoping it was going to tell me... maybe it doesn't. If I go all the way to the top, see if it tells me... I can't get a hold of the iPad. There we go. It doesn't tell me how many are uploaded so far. Well, maybe I don't know if it has that capability somewhere or not. And it might, it's possible it would have it in some of the other versions. So, but I've got quite a few images up there already. So, but there's just no way at this point, at least on the iPad, that I can see of knowing how many images are on there, but it's easily in the thousands. And even here on the iPad, the thing is responding very quickly. So it's well written for the iPad, the iOS version, and the Android version. Very, very well put together. And it's pretty much exactly works the same way on all the devices, whether it's iOS or Android. So pretty happy with that. That's a neat thing that Google has come up with. So before I go, had a couple little things that I jotted down, and they're kind of worth talking about. And let's see here. One of the ideas, and it kind of goes into the thing, you know, we think somehow democracy or is somehow stubbing its toe, or capitalism is sort of somehow stubbing its toe, and things are just kind of falling apart. Or we see what's happening with the traitors in the Congress, and the traitors in the Supreme Court, the traitors in the government. The government's kind of traitorous at this point. It's filled with traitors. And we think, well, something's wrong. Well, you know, but is the same-sex marriage, is that the problem? No. The same-sex marriage is a symptom of the problem. Is abortion the problem? No, abortion is the symptom of the problem. We see symptoms and we want to, we think we'll just outlaw the symptoms. And somehow if we outlaw the symptoms of really what is a moral problem, if we outlaw the symptoms and we prevent the symptoms from happening, then the society's going to get better. It's going to get, somehow we'll be able to make it better. Somehow we'll fix it. We can't. These are simply symptoms. And so when the society deteriorates, as ours has, when you get to you start getting to the end of the deterioration, or to the maximum deterioration, before things really fall apart, or before something major happens to that, you know, maybe is a society ending event, you end up with the, you know, what we're ending up with now. We're coming to the end of the cycle as far as societies that have disintegrated. We're coming up towards the end of the cycle. You look at the Sodom and Gomorrah, and those really happened. You know, people think, well, that's just it's just stories or whatever. No, it's not. That those things actually happened. Those cities were destroyed with fire and brimstone. And in fact, if you look on YouTube and look that up, there was a guy that made a series of documentaries, and he was actually showing the brimstone. You know, the brimstone was embedded in the rocks. So those things actually happened. so we're there. We're at the end of the cycle. We're very close to the end of the cycle. So, but it's not really that those are symptoms of what's gone wrong. They're not the disease itself. They're the symptoms of the disease. So that's worth keeping in mind, because it people think that somehow if we can just reverse this and change the law back and stop the symptoms from happening, that you know, it's kind of like, well, if you've got some horrible, you know, disease, you know, that's either debilitating or fatal, potentially fatal, a fatal disease, and you think, well, if I can just get rid of those symptoms, you know, then the disease goes away. No, it doesn't. You can hide the symptoms. You can try to hide the symptoms, push the tire bulge back in, and it's just going to pop out somewhere else. The disease goes on. The disease is systemic. The disease is ongoing. So that's worth keeping in mind. So that was one of the things that I had thought about, and it was worth talking about. Because that is one of the things that people think, that it's just somehow, it's just all these things are happening and we just have to get rest control back and we can put it all back right. It isn't that easy. Because we're focusing on the wrong things. And kind of along those lines, you know, it's easy, you know, I was having a discussion with somebody the other day, and they were talking about, you know, physical pain and, you know, like joint pain and that type of thing. But pain in general, whether it's joint, whether it's actually physical pain, or if it is a mental pain, pain of conscience, pain of violating that internal constitution. If you have a pain, pain is trying to tell you something. But we have a tendency to think of it as just some sort of just an errant communication, the nerve, somehow the nerve's gone wrong and the pain's invalid. And so I got to take a pill to get rid of the pain, take a pill to do something to get rid of this pain just isn't valid. And so we think of that in terms of a joint pain, for example. But we also think of it in terms of, if you think about it, we think of it in terms of, you know, mental pain, pain of conscience, pain of violating that internal constitution. We think of it as these, you know, somehow it's just not valid, and we got it. We should be able to do something to make that pain go away. Excuse me, but the pain is telling, it's there to tell us something. The pain is, it is a form of communication, and it's there to tell us that, hey, something's wrong. You're doing something wrong. So that's a good thing to keep in mind, and you know. And so if you have physical pain, and I think we all do from time to time, you might have a pain here or a pain there or a joint pain or muscle spasm pain, or you got some kind of pain. You know, if it's really bad, then maybe you take something. But otherwise, you know, the worst possible thing you can do is resent the pain and then start complaining about it and try to get sympathy for it from other people. I think that's a terrible mistake to do that. And it's also a mistake to try to hide pain or make it go away somehow. It's best just to, if the pain's there, if you've got some, whether it's physical pain or whatever kind of pain it is, mental pain, whatever, just experience it. It's not a mistake. It's there for a reason. It's a form of communication. Experience it. What's it going to hurt? Not to be funny, but what you know? What is it? What do you have to lose? You know, that's there for a reason. So therefore, experience it. I was talking about that book, The Shallows, earlier. And the interesting thing is, our brains change, and they can, and I've said this for years, and it's absolutely true. Our brains change. There's something, every thought that we have, everything that we do, every task we engage in, whether it's a physical task or if it's just a thought that we're engaged with, something physically changes in our brain. There are physical things that are happening in our brain that mirror whatever it is that goes on in our minds. And therefore, when I talk about the meditation, that meditation exercise that I have on my website, truckertompodcast.com, it's very important, because that also causes physical changes to happen in the brain. And, but setting that aside, if someone wants to manipulate you, what are they really doing? They're manipulating, at the root, they're manipulating what goes on in your mind. They're manipulating the patterns that that are happening in your brain. And the funny thing is, you'll defend it as if it's your own thought. If someone is able to convince you to buy something, then you're going to, you know, and they, by hook or by crook, by pressure, they trick you into buying something, and or they know that you worship technology, for example, and they get you to buy the upgraded whatever it is, the next version of whatever it is. They're manipulating the patterns in your brain. All who sin are slaves. It's another way of putting it. Someone else has control. Someone else, you're acting out of the someone else is making the suggestions, and you're acting on those suggestions as if, but in your own mind, you're lying to yourself, and that you really want to do this. So you're really acting out of your own will, when in fact you're not. You're dancing to someone else's tune. And so this meditation exercise that I have on my website, very simple technique, unlike any of the other ones, very simple. And I've done it here. I've described it here in the podcast. Very simple technique that gets you whatever we are as human beings. We have this point of awareness, and you just practice holding that point of awareness out of your thoughts. Because typically we're caught up in our thoughts, and the same thoughts go around and around and around. The same resentments, the same how do I react? Should I do it this way? Should I do it that way? The same rationalizations happen over and over and over again. And the same distractions. And so this meditation technique is very important, because it's not salvation. It can't save you, but it can bring you to a point of objectivity, and that being objective to the world around you and to your the very thoughts that are happening in your mind. Being objective to those things is very important. And just keep in mind, everything that we do, every behavior we engage in, everything that we learn, if you learn a new skill, that causes changes to happen in your brain. And changes to the way you think and the way you react. And so that really can explain, you know, why is the magazine business drying up? Why are people not reading as many books? Why are things changing? And it's because people are, in general, have gotten on the internet, and that has caused changes. It's caused major shifts in the way people consume information, consume entertainment, and it's really shifted us away from magazines. But not only has it done, and some of that's just natural consequences. I don't think anybody deliberately decided, well, we're going to kill the magazine business by coming up with the internet. It just sort of naturally ended up happening. But at the same time, when your brain changes, when those patterns change and they fundamentally shift, your behavior changes. And what you really want, what you saw as desirable at one point, is no longer desirable. Things change. So this has really interesting implications for the way society functions, you know, at large. It's really got some interesting implications when you consider how people are reacting to each other. So all of these things are kind of in flux, and they're changing, and they change based on, in this case, it's based on just a better communication system or a faster one. But I think overall it's important to remain objective. No matter what happens on the outside, and there's really nothing wrong with technology, there's nothing wrong with improved communications, but at the same time, you have to, it just increases, if anything, it increases the necessity, the importance of being objective. Finally, you know, I watch a fair amount, and I've talked about this before, I watch a fair amount of, actually a large amount of documentary-type programming. And there's tons of it now that's appearing on YouTube. Especially, I love the space documentaries, anything to do with physics, quantum physics, interesting stuff, any kind of science. Really, really interesting. I find that stuff interesting. But a lot of these people feel it. They feel this obligation. A lot of the scientists feel this obligation to periodically just, you know, kind of reassure each other. They sort of have to, almost like paying lip service. They've got to reassure each other, hey, I'm an atheist, and I believe in evolution, and anybody that believes in that there's a God, you know, somehow they're engaged, and they like this term magical thinking. Magical thinking. Somehow if you believe there's a creator, that's magical thinking. Well, I'll tell you what magical thinking is. Ray Kurzweil thinks that, you know, that they have this idea that if they're just able to replicate all of the neurons and the neuronal connections in the brain, that somehow there's going to be this emergent consciousness. It's just going to, somehow it's just emerging. It emerges somehow from the brain. The human brain, after all, it's just physical. There is no spiritual world. It's just a physical thing, and you've got all these neuronal connections. And somehow consciousness just emerges from that. It's an emergent consciousness, and so they think they can do that with a computer. That's magical thinking. The idea that we just evolved out of dust. somehow the dust in the universe, it just became aware of itself. That's magical thinking. I'm sorry, but that is magical thinking. You know, so... But it absolutely is, if you think about it. Things just don't happen out of the blue. They really don't. So, you know, if you ever find yourself in a debate with an atheist or someone that claims to be, you know, one of these rabid ones especially where it's obvious they're idolizing, it's a false idol in their mind, they're really engaged in magical thinking. You know, are you going to be able to, you know, go to a junkyard and get a giant bag and, or not even a junkyard. Let's say you could just use the example of a junkyard. You go to the junkyard and you get a big bag and you put all these car parts in and then you shake them up. You put them in a paint shaker. How long would it take before you had a Mercedes-Benz? How long could you shake those parts together until you got a Rolls Royce? Or even to make it more dramatic, let's say you dig a bunch of iron ore, different materials out of the ground, different elements. You put them in a big bag or a big paint shaker and you shake it up, big industrial paint shaker. How many millions of years could you shake those parts or those elements before you get a Mercedes-Benz or you get a Cadillac? How long would it take? I don't think it would ever happen. It's obvious to me that it would never, ever, ever. You could do it until the cows come home. billions of years, it would never, something like that would never emerge. Ain't gonna happen. You know, another example, you could have monkeys pounding on typewriter keyboards or computer keyboards today, and you're never going to end up with war and something like war and peace, or even a coherent sentence or a paragraph. Ain't going to happen. Not possible. And to think that it would is magical thinking. So, anyway, probably better be cutting this off. What time is it? Eastern time, it's 1:32. 12:32 Central time. But I've got all day, as I say, I've got all day Sunday to go about 50 miles or 50 or 60 miles. Maybe 70 miles at the most. So, anyhow, hope everyone... is having a great 4th of July weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.